When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
That's right. Welcome to Knife Talk, a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, and anyone who's really interested in, you know, making in general, DIYers and stuff like that. I am Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. Here with me is the captain of the ship, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. And our partner in crime, Reco Mamasi, is in the wilds of, I think, Reno. So I kind of messaged with him today, and he's on a family vacation, cruising around, doing his thing with his family, having a good time.
So he survived the bears. That's the main thing.
Well, he texted me. I mean, he could have texted me with one hand. You never know. I mean, I think he would have said something, but yes, I believe so.
Good, good, good.
How are you doing?
Good. Sweating my nuts off.
All right.
It's 39 degrees here today, which I believe in American money is 104, something like that.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a freak weather thing, to be honest with you. We've had 3 days of it. Tomorrow's going to be hotter, and we have a gig outdoors tomorrow.
What are you going to do?
It's going to be fun. You can't complain. We can't complain. Sun's shining, you know.
Well, here's the question. So you have a gig tomorrow. Is it, what time is the gig?
Well, we've been speaking with the owners of the place today. We're hoping it's later. So we're hoping to be on at 8:30. So hopefully it would, you know, the baking sun would have stopped by then. But yeah, we'll see. It'll be fine. It'll just be a hot show. Very hot show.
How was your gigs? You had two gigs last week.
We did.
How'd it go?
Very hot again. Friday was a smaller one. The Saturday, I told you about, we were playing with a Doors tribute band, and they travel the world. They're a big touring band, and we played before them, and it was fantastic because we used all of their, you know, their PA system and all the rest of it. We had their sound guy who was doing all our sound checking with us and stuff. The sound was incredible. There was about 350 people up dancing. You know, it was proper. It was like a mini festival. You know, it was our best show to date. It was fucking great. Loved it.
Wow.
Massive high after that. Yeah. But tomorrow's show is like a small local restaurant. We're playing outside. It's, you know, it's a small event, but it'll be fine.
So are you still enjoying it, or is it becoming like, I mean, I know, obviously thinking about like the weather and dealing with the restaurant guys, and you still enjoy it?
We are loving it more than anything. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. I mean, you know, we get onto knives eventually, but
it's only 3 minutes in, and we can
exactly.
Come on, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, at first it was a case of, you know, we've been in the band less than a year. Well, about a year now. And at first it was just a case of learn two new songs a week, nonstop, until we had enough for a set. But now we've got, you know, we've got sort of 38 songs in a sort of repertoire. So we've got a set for the summer. So now when we're rehearsing, we're not learning new songs. We're just sort of refining what we've got and making it better each time. So it feels really good. And it's just really comfortable up on stage now. And it's cool. So absolutely loving it. Absolutely loving it. So, yeah, there's talk of a mini tour over winter and next summer and stuff. So, yeah, we're all the four of us in the band are loving it. So it's good.
How would you do a tour? How would you, in your mind, thinking about, obviously, you know, you think about months on end, but obviously it wouldn't be like that. How would you manage a tour?
Well, our bass player, he works in the music school. He's a music teacher. So he works with other bands and stuff as well. So, you know, he's well in with the sort of, you know, the industry, I suppose. But we've got ski resorts just sort of 2 hours away from us. And what he's planning is a ski resort tour. So, you know, you do a bar at a ski resort, go over the mountain to the next resort the next night and do another bar there. So we'd book in sort of 5 nights, a different bar each night in ski resorts. They'd put us up, they'd feed us, you know, and that kind of thing. So, it could be fun. So that's what we're talking about for February time. And then this time next year, going back to the UK and doing 5 days in the UK as well for a bit of a summer tour and just doing, you know, UK sort of pubs and clubs, that kind of thing.
You got to lock these guys into a contract. What if your bass player decides to fuck off?
But honestly, we're all loving it as much as anything. And finally, we're all really getting on. You know, we love spending time together and stuff. So it's really good. It's a really good situation to be in. And yeah, very, considering where we live, we're so remote. Very fortunate to find three others that have the same sort of ambition as me, you know. So it's all good.
Look at you. I watched my wife and my kid have been loving the Sex Pistols show.
How good is that? It's good. I finished it this week.
I watched a little bit of it, and I was thinking about you. The scene that I watched was the guy had to fire one of the bass player. And the manager grabs him. He says, "You got to get rid of him because Johnny Rotten's not going to stay with the band unless you get rid of him." And he takes him into the bathroom, and they're walking around the urinals. And he says, "You got the sick, man. You got the sick." Yeah. And all I can think of is like, this is the Craig Lockwood story, 2022. Yeah. Right around the urinals, sacking the bass player.
I think they play it really well, especially the Johnny Rotten character. I think he's got the mannerisms, and it's good. I enjoyed it.
So everything else is good. Business is good, or
business is good. I sent you a text just before we come online, it's an email received today. So that's going to be in our dilemmas today.
Okay.
Which we'll bring up later. But it's good. I've got this restaurant order I'm doing with the hemp knives, and there's a few other little bits and bobs going on. It's good. It's good. But it's just so damn hot. So damn hot that it's difficult to do much.
And now that you moved into the new place, how is the shop?
It's functional, but not right, if you know what I mean. I can use what I need to do, but, you know, I'm using bloody extension cords everywhere, and, you know, things aren't in the right places and all the rest of it. So, you know, it's functional.
How much more work needs to be done for it to be Craig Lockwood chop knives ready?
Before we're fully up and going again, how I want it, I'd say maybe two months.
All right.
But, you know, I say it is functional. I can do what I need, but it's just a little bit harder than it should be. That's all. You know.
Well, this is how things grow, isn't it?
Exactly. So what about you? What's been going on?
Where do we start? Well, last time we spoke, I had to write a speech for this sculpture project.
And you were on TV.
I was
TV
on
with
TV
speech.
That I did not post because I tell you what, I understand why people don't like the media, because these local. All right, so I made a sculpture. I talked about it last week. I'm going to go into great detail next week's episode of Full Blast with Lee Aeropatch. We're going to talk about where it came from, the sculpture, the guns, the whole thing. I have went out of my way to make this as not controversial as possible with the most controversial subject matter of all time. Yeah. And no matter who I talk to, no matter how I try to put it in the hands of someone to explain it in a very normal, that makes sense kind of way, it's always been taken incorrectly. So even the TV guys, they were just making shit up, and it was like, you know, they had a story to run. They knew what they had. They asked me two questions, and I was slightly embarrassed, to be honest with you, because it was really a mischaracterization of what I was doing. So, which is fine. And I've come to the conclusion that I am not in control. I'm only in control of what I can put out there. I'm not in control of what people's interpretations of what I do are, even if
what people think of it. Yes. Yeah.
So even my friend, I wrapped a video with a friend of mine who's doing a video for us for a Fader Knives for our oyster shucker. And I had this idea, and I wanted to do a year ago, I cooked in the shop with Charlie Palmer, and I had a big steel plate, and I heated up in the even heat. I used my even heat kiln to heat this plate up. I mean, you can drop it in there anytime you want, but and then so I did a demo.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
And you know what I'm going to say? If you go to knifetalk.net/eat, that will take you to Salt Ceramics, who are a distributor of Evenheat, and you'll get $75 off and free shipping in the US. and they have stock ready to ship now. So make sure you go there, knifetalk.net/heat. We put that description down in the down in the description. Sorry, Jeff.
No, you were saying,
tell me about your muscles.
Hey, baby, come on. So I did a demo. We're going to release the hinge cracker oyster knife in the Neptune Sunrise colors. And Tony was going to come down, and he just couldn't do it. So I did a demo on how you open an oyster with the oyster knife. And I got a dozen oysters. They were the smallest fucking oysters. I couldn't find any oysters that were any big. And I opened all 12 without any problems. It was like, hey, this oyster knife's pretty good. Not bad, not bad. So I did a demo on how to open the oysters, and then I did the charbroiled oyster recipe. But I cooked it with, on a plate, a sizzle platter, with this 1,500-degree piece of steel cooking over the top. Oof. So we just finished that just now. But it was funny because my friend...
Sorry, is the cooking on the video as well?
Yeah, the cooking's on the video too.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so we used the plate in the shop, and I heated the plate up, and then I used 1, 2, 3 blocks to raise it above the oysters. And then it just it cooked them perfectly. I mean, they were delicious. And the guy who did the video, my friend Fred, he hates oysters. And I said, you just got to try these. And he's like, these I love. So it was like, great. So we're going to put that up at some point. And then, but it was interesting because Fred does this. He's got a pod, he's got a, in town, he's got Peekskill Exurbanist. It's this great kind of like, you know, it's like about town and the area around us and stuff like that. And he did this great video about the sculpture. But we were talking today, and he knew what he was trying to like co-opt a little bit of the story of it all and change it around and make it a little bit more appealing to the Instagram algorithm. And we got so it's like I can't control my narrative, so I'm just going to do a whole thing, and that's the end of it. But the funny part was, so I just said, oh, I'm not going to wing the speech. I'm going to write a speech. I'm going to make it short as if I wanted to listen to it. So a minute and a half is perfect. And then they unveiled it. It was beautiful out. The police chief was there. All these police officers were there. Then the mayor was there, and the city council was there, and the head of the whatchamacallit, a school, superintendent of schools. It was like all the big mockers in the town. And the best part about the whole thing is they each took me aside and said, they let this huge sigh of relief out. Because I think that there was this idea that I was just going to do a giant fuck you in guns. Yeah. And because the city was involved or the police department was involved, I mean, they really don't know me. I mean, they know me as the knife guy or the sculptor, whatever. So they don't know how subversive I can be. So they just were hoping for 4 years that I wasn't going to motherfuck them. And they are so relieved. We can't thank you enough. It's like, I just don't want to have to clean up after you. So yeah, that was good. Awesome. But the funny story is I had my doctor's appointment today. I had my blood work done and everything like that. And a number of episodes, probably a year ago, or a little under a year ago, I had an episode on this podcast where I said that I had to go to see a urologist. They said my prostate was big. And then I told the story of how the woman was kind of mad at me. Like, she didn't think I should have been there. Like, she said, why are you here? And I said, this doctor told me I should be here. And how do you know? And you had to go back in the thing. But this woman really kind of fucking put her finger up my ass in the most aggressive way possible. I mean, this was... So that was the story. So when I was talking to my normal doctor, he says, well, how come you went to get a PSA? It's the prostate thing. And I said, well, this doctor told me. He's like, really? And then I was telling him the whole story. I said, the funny thing was the urologist was not happy with it. She was just like aggressive with me. And he said, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe she thought I was looking for sexual favors. And he says, well, let me look the file up. He looks up the file and he starts laughing because the notes that the urologist wrote were like, this fucking guy came in here, he doesn't need to finger up his ass. And it was just like, so it was everything I said, but just a little bit more like more aggressive. And then my doctor just started laughing. He's like, what the fuck did you do? What did you do to this woman? I'm like, I didn't do anything. But I was just like, I know that it was, she wasn't happy to see me. And it was like all, it was just nasty in the notes. So,
well, I was out for lunch today because so my sister's over at the moment. So we're out for lunch. We're out there in this baking heat. And we were texting myself and you, weren't we? A few texts.
Yeah.
And you said, well, I'm going for my physical in an hour. So I sent the classic emoji, as you'd imagine, which was the chocolate ring donut right. finger going into it. And but your response was, not this time, I had that already. But then the next word was blood. You just said, not this time, I had that already. Blood.
What?
So that's what you wrote. So I assumed...
I wrote blood work.
That there was blood involved in the rectal examination.
Oh, ew!
So I said to my wife, I'm eating the steak at the time. I'm like, Jesus, look at this. She's like, no, he's going for bloods this time. And I was like,
oh,
okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was just the grammar.
It was blood work. I'm sorry for disgusting you. It wasn't necessary. I mean, you were obviously lost in translation.
Yes, exactly.
But everything's good, and we're onward and upward. I'm actually working on some knives. Besides, I finished the butcher knives. I finished 20 butcher knives, which are great,
yes.
And they look great. And we're really kind of not promoting them a lot because I've made in every batch we pre-ordered, I put more in. So we're having stuff in stock, so people can go to the website and buy things like. The forks, I made a pile of extra forks. And what the cool thing was, is I'll get an order and then I'll just look in the drawer, grab a fork, put it in the mail. And it's like the dream to have this stuff in stock between the hats and the shirts and the fucking prints and the everything. Having stuff in stock and I can just pick it up, put it in a box and ship it is like the dream. So we're doing that now and it's like great. And then last thing is I'm finishing off a set of knives for a friend of mine who I've known for a long time in this like color lab, crazy color lab. And we're going to start to do some new things for next year that I'm really excited about, like more Hidden Tang stuff with G10.
That's what I was wondering. So these colors of your butcher's knives, they follow that same color lab and the same sort of colors and patterns of your previous knives this year. So have you decided on a color scheme for next year? Because I think you said you're going to change them each year.
It's tough because I have a few different ones that I love. And I was just talking to my business partner, Tony, about it. And we were talking about, like, maybe doing some wild card sets where besides having something that's palatable and there's a lot of, like, thought to what's going on. And Tony's a little bit more focused on, like, kind of making it understandable. And I have, like, four different models that I've done that I like. But I'm just not 100% sure if I want that one to be the one for next year. So the problems I have, I'm not unhappy with. Like part of me wants to do bubblegum lift ticket, which has got pink in it and stuff like that. But then I'm like, I did too much blue this year. And there's some other things I've done that I really like. And I might bring back this color. I did Black Lightning. I did it a couple of years ago. I might bring that back. And it's all kind of fun stuff, but it's very thoughtful. And I'm kind of really bringing back to the sculpture stuff in terms of like being thoughtful and thinking about things and trying to be as thoughtful as possible. So, yeah.
But the idea is you will have a signature color set again each year.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Neptune Sunrise is going to be retired as of December 31st. We're going to lock it up. That's it. So it's nice. Cool. And we have still lots of orders to do. And we have, we're dropping a new knife every, what are we doing? Like almost every month and a half. So we get the oyster knife coming up, and then we're going to paring knives, and it's cool. It's fun. It's super fun. So
cool. Okay, let me tell everybody about these guys.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers, available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
Exactly. Do it now. Shall we do some questions?
We have questions. We have listener feedback. We're bringing back the hot takes this week. So whatever you want, dilemmas, questions.
Yeah, let's start with a few questions and we can dip in and out, I suppose.
Whatever you want.
The first is from J Mod Knives. And again, they've contacted us via Instagram, a DM at Knife Talk Podcast. And they said, got a question for you. You think if I drop my 170-pound anvil off the side of a 12-foot half pipe onto an old skateboard, the anvil will break. I think it could make for some pretty rad footage. Keep in mind, I'm in Arizona, and the ground is pretty hard.
Let me set this up, because I kind of went back and forth with him. So J-Mod Knives is a really great skateboarder, and he makes knives.
That's the guy. Right, okay, yeah.
He set up, you know, these skateboarders, they do videos, and they're amazing, and they do aerial tricks and stuff like that. So he sent me a picture. He set up his anvil on the anvil stand on the top of the ramp. I don't even know how he got up, 175-pound anvil on the top of the ramp. And then the idea was he wanted to drop it in slow motion onto the skateboard. So I thought originally he was going to tie the skateboard, the anvil to the skateboard and ride it down the...
Ride it down, right, yeah.
But he wants to drop it off 12 feet onto the skateboard and watch the skateboard, you know, smash to smithereens. But he's worried the anvil might break.
You would have thought so. If it's cast, you certainly would have thought so, wouldn't you? It would crack.
Well, if there's give, I don't think anything will happen. I think the only... What I said to him, I thought the only thing I thought could happen, would break, would be if it went straight down on the horn. You know, because my Fisher that I have, Fisher Anvil, has got it's cast, but it's got a hardened top. And the top of it broke off. And the top of it broke off for various reasons. One is because it seemed as though it wasn't forge welded 100% between the tip of the nose and the body. That can happen. Or, you know, all that weight going on with that nose, that could break it too. So the only thing I really thought of was you could, if it fell and it hit horn first, the horn might break.
Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. J-Mod Knives. You need to do this in the name of science for us all.
Go follow J-Mod Knives and see what he does. Because he's doing some video. Exactly. He put it up there. That anvil got to come down somehow.
Yeah. In slow-mo. It's certainly going to wreck the skateboard. Certainly. I'm thinking it's just going to crack. I would have thought it would just crack straight through the anvil. But what do I know?
See,
you know?
I think this is what I think is going to happen. Because it's on the ground. It's not on asphalt. It's on the ground. I think there's enough flex in the skateboard that it's going to flex a little bit and maybe bounce, and then because it's kind of soft ground, I feel like it's going to bounce off. I think there's going to be some bouncing, and then someone's going to say, "Oh, you know what you're talking about. It's going to..." So we're going to find... J-Mod Knives, you got to send us a video. So we need to know what's going to happen. We need to know what happens to the anvil and the skateboard.
And everybody should just follow J-Mod Knives. Everyone find yourself.
J-Mod Knives. There you go.
There we go.
The next one comes from DFM Toolworks. Hey guys, question for you and the listeners. If I'm trying to show off the glowing steel in videos, should I film at dawn/dusk or film in the dark with minor backlight? I want to shamelessly plug our new rounding hammers in those videos. Thanks, JT.
JT, is this like the YouTube help section now? We've had two about videos.
Yeah.
We know nothing about videos.
Well, you know more about videos than I do. I don't know shit about videos. And when you get a chance, JT, we've talked a number of times, a lot of in the DMs. I don't know your full name. So at some point, you got to send me your name so I know who you are. Because we met at Maker Camp a number of years ago, and we've had nice conversations. But I don't know your full name, so... DFM.
So he wants to show the hot glowing steel in videos. So obviously it needs to be dark. What I'd say is probably have some sort of light, not from behind you, but from in front. So when you put your hammer there, you'll be able to see like the silhouette of it and the shape of it. Be quite dramatic. You know, with the glowing red as well. But then if behind, rather than just have black, I'd have some sort of smoke or something as well, just so you've got a bit of movement, you know? I think it could look, especially in slow motion, it could look really cool. But yeah, and you just need to, you know, use some sort of post-processing and just bang up that contrast so the blacks are blacker and, you know, the red is redder. And just make it as dramatic as possible, I suppose. But, you know, what do we know about that sort of thing?
Actually, I'm going to ask you a question. I have a photo question because, and I know that a lot of other knife makers know this too, that when you film hot steel, you know, over 1,500 degrees, the light source is different or it's brighter in the image than it actually is in reality. Like today when we were filming with this we were filming this steel plate. And I had said to him, like, well, it's going to look a little darker in real life, but once it's, because once you start to hit it with the camera, it's going to be a lot brighter. Why does that happen? You know what I'm talking about?
No. Maybe you're... the screen that you're using to view it on, you just got brightness up too high, maybe. I don't know. It should give a good representation of what's... So, you know, on digital, it should be a good representation of what's being captured. But, yeah, use something, you know, use something, whether it's using Premiere or Final Cut or whatever. You can, you know, you can make those blacks blacker, and you can make the, you know, the lights lighter, you know, by adjusting the contrast and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it could be a really cool video. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah, his rounding hammers are cool because they're machined and they're like, they look like they're twisted. Mm. They're like these, it's really, he's a really talented guy and incredibly a talented machinist. I know he sells kind of machinist tools, like very machined scribes and triangles and rulers and stuff like that. He's a dynamite guy.
Cool. Cool. Okay, we'll do one more, and then maybe we'll do some hot takes.
Yeah.
Nice handmade knives, again on Instagram. They've asked, hey, cuties, can I ask you a question? I have a 2x48 grinder currently. I have no issues with it, though I'm always finding myself on the Broadbeck Ironworks page looking at grinders. Do you feel it is a want versus need purchase for me by making the jump to a 2x72? Besides the belt life and the heat buildup, is it a major performance difference that will warrant the investment? And he says, cue the ad read, Craig. it's that thing. If you're happy with your work, and, you know, who are we to say you need to go out and buy a Broadbeck? Because if you're happy with what you're doing and you think you're doing a great job, but maybe if you're local to somebody else who has a 2x72, just go and feel it. It doesn't have to be a Broadbeck. It could be any 2x72. Just go and see the difference. And see if it works for you. Belt availability is probably a big thing as well. You probably get cheaper 2x72s, even though there's more abrasive on them, just because they're more commonly purchased. I'd say go and use somebody's. But if you're happy with what you've got, not, you know, don't necessarily have to have a 2x. Just because, you know, other people do, you don't have to. What are you thinking?
Well, speaking, you know, that's interesting that you said that, because I didn't really think, I hate consumables. That's the one part about, like, everything that's the worst. And the worst part about having to buy consumables is a drag. The fact that 2x72s are, the belts are very well, they're very easily available because they're relatively common to more than just industrial people. Mm. If there was a bigger belt, obviously, and it was more common, it would be easier to get a hold of. I think that the real issue with the benefit of the 2x72 grinder is you're optimizing more abrasive. So you're not, you know, you're gaining a lot more use out of the time that you're on the grinder, and they're more optimized for heavy duty use. So, I mean, the 2x48s are great. I mean, 2x48s are great and all this stuff's great, but the 2x72 is just, you're optimizing your work for a little bit kind of closer to being industrial.
Yeah, yeah. And look, whilst we're on the subject of Broadbeck grinders, I'm going to tell you about something else that they do. It's not actually a grinder. Well, technically it is. They've got a new sharpening system, and this is a 1x42 belt this thing uses. They've got 25 units available. It's $1,200 for the sharpener, $200 for the guide system. So if you need to set the angles, if you need a bit more experience, that kind of thing, there's an angle setter for that as well. You can take a knife from, you know, cutting that secondary bevel to razor sharp in just about 5 minutes. It's the only sharpening system on the market that's capable of sharpening hollow, convex, and flat secondary bevels. Variable speeds, high torque at low RPMs. And it's going to be good because those guys are building it and they make great grinders. So if they're building any machine, you know they put a lot of time and effort into it. So go take a look. Broadbeck ironworks.com. Have a look at the stuff they've got. It's not just grinders. They've got this new sharpening system and it looks fantastic. I'm just reading through the details now. It sounds a bit special. So go take a look.
You know, actually, before we go into hot takes, I'd like to do a little listener feedback because we have to tie up some loose ends.
Yeah. Okay.
And if the listener want to get involved, you know, send us your thoughts, or if somebody says something and you want to, like, you know, give a point. Don't send photos. You guys send photos. I can't use photos on a podcast. It doesn't help me that much. But you can go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and send us all your stuff. So a number of episodes ago, we had a message from Fallback Forge, and what he said was that he had sold a knife to a guy, and then it was late in coming or didn't come right away. So instead of contacting Fallback Forge, he contacted PayPal and then basically wanted his money back directly from PayPal. And he was telling us, what do you do in the situation, you know, just because it's missing and stuff like that. And we gave us our opinion. And he gave us the follow-up, what happened. So that makes sense. I set it up right, right? It makes sense.
Yeah, okay. That's what happened.
So he wrote back. He says, here's some follow-up. PayPal decided that I'm responsible for the USPS losing the package. So that's fun. And I think I'm most annoyed that he went straight to PayPal to dispute the issue. He didn't ask me for a refund. He didn't file a claim with the post office. Went straight to PayPal because he knew they'd snatch that money from me the moment he hit submit. So this is an issue that people are having. I know that Mert Tansu had the same problem with a guy who turned out to be a scammer, where you pay through PayPal, and then PayPal protects the buyer.
Yeah.
And with very little human contact. So it's... You don't have a lot in regards to, you know, a trial or any type of arbitration or anything like that. So this guy,
and I do agree that they should be protecting the buyer, definitely. But as you said, the lack of being able to contact PayPal as the seller is a real, real huge problem, massive problem.
We deal with all these things. You know, life and society are not gray issues. I mean, are gray issues. Everything is not black and white. And unfortunately, we get in these positions where you're dealing with these gray issues, and they're just not easy to deal with. And it sucks. It sucks. And I feel bad for this guy. And I know that a lot of other people really stay away from PayPal for this reason.
Yeah,
but you know, PayPal is convenient, and that's unfortunately the reason why we use it so much.
And another thing that can happen is, I think what happens here in Europe is that if somebody goes to PayPal and says I haven't received something, they will then take the money from the buyer back. But I don't think it goes to the immediately to the person who bought. I think it's sort of held in, like, it's almost like an escrow kind of thing until the mediation is sorted out. Whereas if they went straight to the seller and said, look, I haven't received this, could I have a discount? The seller is available to, you know, can give an immediate discount. Refund. Not discount, refund. So sometimes it's not always better for the buyer to do that. It's getting complicated talking about buyers and sellers.
Of course.
But sometimes it can be of detriment to both parties, you know? It's just that lack of contact, you know, with PayPal is a real head fuck. Which this brings me nicely to a dilemma that I have this week, actually.
Okay.
So, maybe about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, I was doing something called the Sustainable Knife, which was recycled steel. It was recycled handles, and it was made as green as I could possibly make it at the time, these knives. And to make them even more sustainable, they were sort of guaranteed for life. If you have a problem with it, or if it needs sharpening, send it back. And then, you know, there's a bit of a premium added to the price for this, and I'd sharpen it and send it back. You know, the customer pays the shipping and all the rest of it. I had one, I think the email came through either this morning or yesterday, where they said, oh, no, is there any way you could repair this? I remember you saying they were guaranteed for life. But is there any way this could be repaired? And what had happened, these knives, they had a recycled plastic handle. They was like a smoky gray. You may sort of remember how they looked.
Sure.
And this picture clearly shows that the knife has been sort of, the handle has been sort of rested on something super hot, whether it's a hot pan or a grill or something, and it's just melted through. You know, a clear, defined line where it's been rested on this thing.
Like a crater, almost.
Exactly, yeah. And it being plastic, it's just melted straight through, like a hot hot knife through butter. I'm sure it would have gone that fast. And I'm thinking, oh, there's a dilemma. Now, does the guarantee cover this? Because this is clearly sort of misuse. But my wording at the time was, you know, any problems, I'll fix it. You know, so, you know, in this case, I'm going to fix it. I'll put a new handle on it and I'll send it back out. But I'm thinking, do I need to, you know, I do obviously need to change the wording of that, you know? It needs to be, you know, fair use or, you know, how you'd normally use a knife. You know, any knife that you lean on a hot pan, it's not going to do it well. It's not going to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, so it's a real sort of dynamic. Obviously, with this time, I'm going to replace the handle and send it back. But I think I need to make it clear in the future that for this particular knife, where it was, you know, guaranteed for life, and I still want to be able to do that, and I'm sure you do with your knives as well. If anybody has an issue, you know, you guarantee and you'll fix it up. But in this particular case, I just wonder what your response would have been to that.
I know what my response would have been. I would have cursed, not at the person. I would have got on the phone with Tony, and I would have just let it all out. I would have let it all out, and I say I do that all the time. He loves it. He thinks it's funny. Because he knows that I will talk my way completely around from this. What a dummy. I can't believe. What are you doing? What is he cooking his knives? What is going on here? To me being like, I'll take care of it. I'll take care
exactly.
of it. Because it's, because those, some of those things, some of the repairs that I do are so few and far between that it's like, you know what? I would prefer. Me personally, I would prefer, and in regards to the guy before, in regards to the PayPal thing, I had recently, I have a customer who changed his address, but he didn't realize that he had changed his address on an order.
Yes, I've had a few
but
of them.
But he also didn't realize, he assumed that the shipping wouldn't be a problem to this address because it was under construction or something like that. I sent everything, and he says, oh, by the way, is there any way you can change the address? I said, I sent it, like, you know, a week ago. And he says, well, because my contractor said he couldn't get it or anything like that. And I said, well, here's what I'll do. And this is a good customer of mine. It wasn't a lot of stuff. I said, you know, it seems you can contact the post office because it didn't get returned to me. It says it was delivered to, like, a locker. Go look at the locker and figure it out. And I said to him, and I wrote to him, I said, if there's a problem, I'll take care of you. And just the idea of me not, like, making this guy jump through hoops, this, just giving him the resurgence that I'm going to take care of you. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, go call him up or here's your tracking number. Go see if, go to the, wherever this locker might be and see if they have it. And if for some reason it's gone, I got you. Yeah. That was enough for this guy to be like, as opposed to being like, well, that's not my problem. I know so many that's not my problem, guys. And the interesting thing is with these people who get into what they think is the right way of doing business, you're making more problems than it's worth. You know, having customer service is monumental in regards to, number one, your perception, but the other thing is how your customers treat you. Yeah. You know, because I mean, this guy might say, "Hey, I burnt the shit out of my knife. I was putting it on. I was using it to make s'mores or something like that. I get a hold of Craig, and I'm being a little bit like, I know that if I were that dude, number one, Craig, I would have said, listen, I fucked this up. Is there any way that I can pay you? Because this is my fault, clearly.
It is clear what's up. It is clear. Just to be fair, they weren't confrontational in any way.
Yeah.
They just said, oh, I remember at the time you said they'd be guaranteed for life. You know, could this be repaired? That's what they're
saying. If I'm that guy, here's what I'm saying to you. I know exactly what I'm saying and not saying. I'm saying to you, hi, Craig. Oh, you know, I took my knife and, you know, I just used it for, you know, I used it to, you know, move some wood around in the fireplace or something like that and melted it. I know you did a lifetime guarantee and I feel guilty because I know this is my fault. Would you take a little bit of money to fix this problem? And give me both answers and I'll tell you how I feel.
Okay. In this case, what I'm doing is I'm doing it. You know,
right.
I'll take care of it. Don't worry. That's what I'd say in this particular instance.
Right.
That's what's happening. Yeah.
Good. Tell me. I'll take your money. Tell me, so I'm going to say, okay. I'm going to say to you, Craig, listen, I'll give you, I'll pay you. Okay.
Hello, Craig Chop Knives. How can I help
hey,
you?
Hey, Craig. It's Jeff. I got one of your knives. You know that?
Nice. Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you.
It was the sustainable knife project you did, and I love it. And it's my favorite knife and everything like that, but I have one problem.
And how's that go? Okay, you have a problem. Okay.
I don't know how to say this. I was branding one of the cows on the ranch, and I accidentally hit the chef knife with the branding iron, and I melted.
Well, I've got a question for
please,
you then.
Go ahead.
You're clearly an idiot.
hey.
But do you piss on your boots before you wear them?
How did you know? I went to my urologist, and she said I gotta stop pissing on my boots. I got a urinary tract infection from all that. No, but seriously, so, you know, I know that I screwed this handle up. And I'm wondering, can I pay you to fix the handle? I know you said that it's lifetime guarantee, but I feel guilty because I know it's my fault. And if I give you a little bit of money, will you take it to fix my handle?
Yeah, as I say, it was a lifetime guarantee, but this is clearly misuse. I didn't design this to be branding cows. This was designed to be used as a kitchen tool. So, I'll fix it. I want you to be happy with a knife. I'll fix it. But, you know, this may cost you, I don't know, $100. Are you happy with that?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'll send it in the mail. Click. Cool. I'm hanging up on the phone. Click.
Okay.
Hill.
But you've put the phone down quite pissed off, too, haven't
Hill,
you?
Hill, this motherfucker is taking my money. This guy didn't understand that I was being magnanimous and I was offering him money, and he's supposed to say, no, that's okay. It's a lifetime guarantee. I swear to God, this cheap son of a bitch, I can't believe. And then she says to me, well, then why'd you say you can offer him some money? And I'm going to say, well, because I'm thinking I'm giving him the okie doke. I'm hoping he's going to be normal. And he's going to say, no. He called my bluff.
Yeah, I think that's what happens a lot of the time. Yeah, it is a weird one, but in this case, it is my fault. Not my fault. Obviously, not my fault.
Is it hard to replace it?
Well, yeah, it is really because it's. I need to make more of that material to begin with.
Oh, you don't have any more? You
know? No. So you know, but I need to make more anyway because I do want to do more of that stuff. So you know, but. Yes, it's not easy, but I'll do it. But this is what I do. If I was in that situation, okay, right, I'm going to ring you
okay,
up, right?
Okay, who am I? Am I Craig Lockwood?
You're Craig okay. Lockwood of Chop Knives.
Craig Lockwood here.
You prick. Listen, Craig.
Yes, sir.
My wife was using one of your knives. She's only got to put it down on a hot pan, hasn't she?
So what do you want me to do about it?
I want to make it happy. Is there any way you could fix this for me? Is there any way? You know, it would be a huge favor.
Well,
a huge, huge favor. Is there any way you could fix this for me?
Anything for love. Anything for love. I once said to somebody, I think I once said, somebody told me that if I hooked them up, they're going to get laid. And I said to him, you better get laid or I want the fucking knife back.
I want to see the tip.
I said, actually, funny enough, I had a woman who was desperate to get a knife. And this was a number of years ago. And she said to me, this knife I'm going to give to my boyfriend, I know that when I give him this knife, it will set the balls rolling for him to propose to me.
Oh wow!
And I said, it was like a tight deadline, and I was just like, anything for love. But let me tell you this, there better be a ring. And she said, what do you mean? I'm like, no ring. I get the knife back, and I left it like that. I'm very quiet. She's like, are you serious? I'm just like, I mean, yeah, I'm serious. She ended up. And I was obviously kidding. You know what I mean? Yeah. Can you imagine getting rejected from the, you know, all of a sudden you're told rejection
and
like, all right, I'll have that knife back, you know? And she sent me a picture with the wedding ring and everything like that. So it was a funny thing, but I'd do it. You know, if you're a flea bag and you have nothing but problems, I mean, I can understand why you'd weasel your way out of it. But I mean, if it's not that often, it's better to have good PR. It's better to have like people say, this guy took care of me, because in the knife making world, let me tell you what, assholes are spotlighted all your people that you have bad interactions with, I hear about it. I'm not talking about you, Craig. I'm talking about in the knife world.
You get all the DMs.
I am like the knife talk. I'm the knife world's customer service. I hear all about it. I know all the skeletons in the closets. Trust me. So just do the right thing.
Yeah.
And it isn't karma. Yeah,
come to the conclusion that that's what I'm doing in this particular case. Perhaps that was an interesting question for, you know, for others as well, if they'd been in that situation, what they would have done. You know?
And it isn't karma. People say karma. It's not karma. It's the law of averages. If you do shitty things often, you're going to do it to the wrong person. That's not karma. Karma is, you do nice things and you don't get reincarnated as a worm. You know, that's karma.
That's a good way of thinking about it.
It's the law of averages. Exactly. If you're a shitty person... If you're a shitty person all the time, the law of averages means you're going to meet somebody who's not going to take well to you being a shitty person. It's nothing to do with fucking karma. Yeah. It's just you're dumb, and then they're going to know it. If somebody's going to, you're going to be stupid to the wrong guy. I had a friend, my college roommate, Miles. I love it. This guy, Miles, is one of the best bronze casters, glass blowers. Unbelievable. He, in college, he used to throw firecrackers outside of the car when people were tailgating him. And it was dangerous. Obviously, you can't throw firecrackers in cars behind you. They freak out. And we were with his dad one day, and his dad was just like, "Are you still throwing firecrackers out the window at cars behind him?" And he goes, "Well, when they get too close." And his dad says, "You can't do that. You know why?" And I was thinking he was going to say, "Because you hurt somebody." He said, "You're going to hit the wrong guy, and he's going to hit you with a tire iron over your head."
Yeah.
So, thanks, Dad. Yeah. Good. That's some good parenting right there.
I do like that. It's the law of averages. Yeah. Fader has spoken.
I
tell you about good customer service. The guys down there in Texas Fire Supply, TexasFireSupply.com, they've got everything you need, whether you're a farrier or a knife maker. They do Indasa, which is the sandpaper that we use. Everybody uses because it's the best stuff. They stock all that, but everything you'd possibly need as a knife maker at TexasFireSupply.com. If you use Knife Talk 10, you'll get 10% off the order. And as I said, they also do Rhino Wet by Indasa. It's worth going there just to order your Rhino Wet. So go take a look. TexasFireSupply.com. Okay. What do we have? You said
we got
a bunch of things.
Great hot takes. We still have listener feedback, but I think we've done enough listener feedback. There's a lot of guys. We were talking about using right angle grinders last week and saying that I bet somebody could figure out a way to do a jig. Well, the floodgates open. There are a lot of YouTube videos of guys, attaching threaded rod to the sides of their right angle grinders and making that exactly what I suggested, that Aaron Goff profiling jig. They're on the YouTube.
Three-fingered engineers.
They're on YouTube.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So we're going to do hot takes. So we brought back hot takes. Hot takes are, in journalism, a hot take is a piece of deliberately provocative commentary that's based almost entirely on shallow moralizing, usually written on tight deadlines with little research or reporting and even less thought. Okay? So it's like a loud, fact-free declaration. I love hot takes.
What have we got?
But the best hot takes are the ones where they're really well written, and you guys did a good job. I'm going to just start it off with my own hot take. I was listening to Work For It podcast, and they were talking about jigs and stuff like that. And we talk about this a lot, about using jigs.
We did last week at length, yeah.
We talk about, there's this, the idea that, using jigs is cheating and these little spots where people get angry and whatever like that. So I was listening to it, and I came up with a hot take to start the whole thing off. And the hot take is this: when you justify using jigs and rests and have to make things work easier, you can't have your feelings hurt when somebody calls you a stock removal guy. Can't have it both ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense, like, I suppose.
Because there's a lot, and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, that's what we say all the time. It's like that Seinfeld, are you gay? There's nothing, not that there's anything wrong with it. Are you a stock removal guy? Not that there's anything wrong with it. There's a lot of, hurt feelings when you when people are like, you know, there are these, you know, you just can't have it both ways. Just take it on the chin.
No, I agree.
Just be, have a little bit of sense of humor and have a little bit of like, okay, fine. Nick Ange, my first meeting with him, and now we're friends, is he just called me stock removal guy. And I wasn't insulted by it, but I know that it was a little bit cutting, but at the same time, I was just like, I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Jake Norris says, here's a hot take. It happened to be right after I wrote this that he put in this one. So Jake Norris says, here's a hot take. Using jigs and guides to make knives doesn't devalue the fact that they're handmade. Woodworkers have hundreds of jigs and no one questions them. I'm with you. So
true.
He takes the opposite point of my point that people have to figure, there are these strange little pecking order things. And it's like mailing each other and like, what's righteous and what's not righteous. And like,
it's tribal, isn't it? Which club are you in kind of thing, you know? I mean, you want to pigeonhole everybody into a certain club. So you know what they're like then, you know what the other club is like and all that kind of thing.
Well, it is interesting because talking to the guys who passed the ABS, you know, when you pass a journeyman smith, a master smith, you are leveling up to a certain degree. And I had Matt Stagmer, Will Stelter, James Fleming, and Nick Rossi on, and the audio is...
Was Will Stelter there, was he?
Listen...
I heard the audio. I wasn't sure if he was...
When I quit podcasting, it will be completely for technical reasons. It will not be for the work I put in, the energy I put in. It will always be for... the audio problems. So we had issues. What happened was it was originally going to be Will, James, and Matt, and then less than the night before the podcast, Will says, hey, Nick Rossi's here. You want him on too? What are you going to do? Say no. The problem is because of Squadcast, you can't have so many people on. I can't have five people on. It just won't do it. And then, you know, did I give Will a nice microphone and headset before, you know, like a year ago? Yeah. Did he use it? No. I can only do so much, you know, and then there's, you know, I was kicked out of Squadcast and it was like a fucking lot of fooling around. It was a good episode except for the audio was horrible and it was like, I never want to do it again. You know, it was like, let's hang it up. I'm never going to do four guys again. That's what she said.
It's tricky when everybody's in different rooms using different equipment.
When you talk to these guys and see the energy and time spent doing these performance tests and becoming journeyman smiths and realizing putting their work under a microscope, there's a different level in regards to what they're doing. It's just the way it is. I mean, they make knives differently now. And that's okay. You know, there's these weird little hurt feelings here and there. And, you know, what can you do? You know, what can you do? So
there's definitely a place for, you know, traditional craftsmanship, you know, without a doubt. But my point of view is I want to get to making something that performs well and looks well as quickly as possible. If I'm doing something that makes something, if I do something quickly, just because it's quicker, and if it's to the detriment of the product, I wouldn't do it. But my thinking is everything that I do allows me to get the performance that I want quickly, and that's my sort of happy place there.
Right.
And you know, and I always talk about, you know, there's different levels to what we do. You know, Mareko's on a completely different level to what I mean. You do things differently the way I do them too. And everybody's got to find their level, you know, where they're happy. You know, there's going to be people out there that they're like, well, I'm not even going to use electricity. You know, I'm not going to use grinders. I'm going to do it completely all as people would have done it 300 years ago. And that's their thing, which is fine. And there's other people who will literally just buy everything and put things together. That's their thing.
Right.
That's fine. There's no right or wrong.
But there's also under the auspices of not being completely transparent.
Yes.
There's a lot more of, like, you know, and it also falls upon originality. Like, I'm having to work harder, so my stuff is harder to copy. And a lot of it is, And being influenced is fine. I'm influenced by a lot of people in terms of styles and in terms of approaches and stuff like that. But in terms of like what happens, I find that when people do interpretive work that's inspired by someone, and what happens is they take it upon themselves, they take it upon their own, but it's almost glossed over that it was inspired by someone else, you know. And I think that falls under the same style, the same idea as, you know, I saw some guys using the same verbiage I do, you know, for his handles or stuff. Like it's just there's stuff that is, you know, it's something to think about. And I can understand why people get upset about certain things. I can understand why people are like, why, similarities are the sincerest form of flattery. If I did all the hard work and then you're just kind of like, you know, I worked like a dog, you know, some guys work like dogs for years and years and years and years and years. And then you just kind of like figure out what they did at the last two steps of the situation. I can understand why people get upset about that.
Yeah, yeah. And I see more and more that, I mean, I spend less and less time on Instagram anyway, looking at knives. But I've seen it more and more over the last year, maybe, of people commenting on people's works. And that looks very much like, and they'll tag the person's work, you know. And I think that's a bit shitty as well, doing that, you know. You know, so publicly.
Uh-huh.
When, you know, quite often the response is, oh, I didn't even know about their work. I'll go take a look. Oh, it's pretty cool, you know? And that's generally the conversation that then happens. But yeah, it's some people sometimes just trying to call people out, saying, oh, I can see what you've done there, kind of thing.
I think that there's loyalty. I think that there's people who do that see the amount of work that someone else has done, and that they're, it's almost like a sense of defending that person's honor without them knowing about it. It's hard, man. And in the blacksmithing world, it's even harder. It's harder to make stuff completely your own. And I'm really kind of finding myself, instead of being inspired by things that I've seen, I have inspired by experiences that I've had, but also kind of the mindset and approach that I've had from making sculpture. Like, the sculptures that I've done, I know where they all come from, and I can talk about them, and I can intellectually talk about them. And I've been really trying to use that same avenue with the knife designs, the color labs, and all the, you know, the shapes. And I know all the things I've done, you know, like the forks and the offset serrated. I know where that came from, and it came from a sincere place. And I can't tell people what to do, and I can't tell people that I should do this. And when I came up with my friction folder, I was looking at a lot of different guys. I was looking at Nick Rossi stuff with Charlie Lionheart's, and I was trying to think, how can I make this my own? Like, how can I use my experience and the things that I like about sculpture, things that I like about knife making, things that like I like about my knives, and artistic approach to make this my own. And that was a very important goal of mine, is how do I make this my own and not just like, you know, slapping together something that's clearly somebody else's, you know?
Yeah.
Ooh, hot takes got real hot today.
Yes. It's a difficult one, because we always say there's only so many ways you can make something, you know, sharp and pointy.
But I think that we also use that as an excuse, or like that justifies, you know, it. I just think that, you know, people make fun of being a sculptor, people being an artist, stuff like that, but there is much more philosophical thoughtfulness behind it that allows me. I think that it's my college education is more than just I went to art school. You know, I'm much more thoughtful in regards to my approach on everything. So. Nice. You want some more hot takes?
Nice. Yeah. First of all, let me tell everybody about Dharmasteel. If you don't know Dharmasteel, they make beautiful, beautiful stainless Damascus. The most amazing patterns. If you look at dharmasteel.se, you'll see the patterns that they make. All Swedish steel. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. They've got an Instagram, Dharmasteel Lab. And you'll see on Instagram the kind of stuff people are making with Dharmasteel. Super, super high-end stuff. Go take a look. We can get you a discount as well. If you use Knife Talk, you'll get 10% off your order if you order directly with Dharmasteel, dharmasteel.se. Honestly, high-end, beautiful, beautiful stuff. So if you want to take your stuff to the next level or make something special for, you know, a special product in any way, go take a look at domsteel.se.
And
they do pants. There we go.
And last but not least, in regards to that, if you follow along the ABS, you go, you know, test to be a journeyman smith, they want their knives to be very specific. So you it is hard to have that innovation, you know, at that level. They want it to look a certain way. So that kind of individuality is frowned upon to a certain degree, and I respect it. I respect that they want it to be tight and in a specific way. So it's all very interesting. It's something to be, it's not yes or no, good or bad. It's something to just be, think about, you know.
Yeah.
It's not, not casting aspersions. Okay.
And I suppose at that level, if it's going to be, I mean, effectively being judged, you need to have constraints, don't you? Because you need to judge everybody on the same level.
Right.
You know, it's yeah.
They have certain expectations.
Certainly understand that. Yeah,
right. But it makes it interesting. It makes it once again, you're dealing with art versus craft and what's what. And I find it all to be interesting. It doesn't good or bad. It's just interesting. Yeah. So here is another hot take from Isaac M. Isaac M. says, "Hot take: people that sleep naked don't give a fuck about emergencies." That is true. That is true,
mate. It's 39 degrees tonight. I do not give a fuck about emergencies.
Ever since 9/11, when I get up out of bed, I put my clothes on for the day. I cannot tool around in my underpants. Because I drove my wife in my fucking cut-off sweatpants, shorts, and slippers. I had to walk around all fucking New York like I was in my pajamas. It was terrible. I agree completely. You got to just have your clothes nearby. William McKinley says, here's a hot take. BMW drivers are no longer the worst drivers on the road. Tesla drivers are here, and they're taking the top spot by storm.
Not Range Rover drivers.
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody I don't know, but Tesla drivers really are something else. I tell you what, they feel like that they kind of have a new ownership of the road.
Yes, maybe.
Ownership of the road. Rob McKinnon says, here's a hot take. Hey, jackass, just because you're dating my daughter doesn't mean I need to make a knife for you.
That's quite what specific, kind of fucking, that one. But
what kind of fucking dillweed ask is the father of the daughter he's dating, go make me a sandwich. Go make me a knife.
Yeah.
You're crazy. Nice Handmade Knife says, here's a hot take. It's cool to do your own heat treating for one-offs, but when you do batches, save yourself time and outsource that shit. I may or may not be speaking out of hurt here because I don't own an even heat. And thanks for the read. The segment he created, that segment we did a couple months ago that we're going to have to bring back, is what was your strangest customer request? That was a segment that Nice Handmade.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. That was a real good segment. We got to do that again. Couple more. John Marston says, here's a hot take. You can learn from your mistakes. And an ounce of good advice can save you from a ton of bad advice. Either way, quit your bitching. Enjoy the journey. John Marston.
Enjoy the journey. There's one for your newsletter.
That's right. And one for my newsletter. Leonardo Lee says, here's a hot take. Ribs and chicken wings are the lowest form of meat because they're 50% bone. There's nothing you can do to them that you can't do to other cuts and are actually made of food. So
closer to the bone, the sweeter the meat.
That's what she said. Lord, I'm getting hot now. I get hot over here. Hot stuff, Craig. Here's the one thing that people don't talk about. And I know last week you got all horned up about your chicken wings and your pork belly.
And belly pork, yeah.
People never, ever, ever mention the reason why people like wings so much. The chicken wing has the most bite for bite ratio of crispy skin to meat. There's no other part of a chicken like that. You could take a bite out of any part of the chicken wing and have skin and meat. So it makes it the perfect bite of chicken.
Yeah, and that, you know, and for that reason, it's got that extra fat as well. And we all crave fat, don't we? Yeah. And in fact, we had chicken wings tonight, too. So,
At you, chicken wing. Look at you.
Big fan of the wing.
You're a big fan of the wing. J.D. Eiler says, super steels are unnecessary if you match proper heat treatment and proper steel to the intended use and proper design of a knife. And then I have three more that they are good. This is an anonymous hot take because Some people don't want to take the heat, which I understand completely. Anonymous hot take. Since you have to sharpen and tune your knives from time to time anyway, there's really nothing wrong with a bamboo cutting board. Don't believe the hype. What's your opinion on bamboo cutting boards, Greg?
I don't have one. Don't have an opinion. From what I hear, they're not good. But, it's better than using glass pastry boards that I've seen many people use, you know? So I don't really have an opinion.
There's a lot of people who feel that there's a famous knife company in California that's like going out of their way to like do videos or that are like cutting bamboo boards like axes and stuff like that because they destroy the blades of your knives. Mm. I mean, they're harder than regular wood. I mean, I think I've heard people say that for cutting boards, the best cutting boards are end cutting boards.
End grain.
Because it kind of like separates and then reheals itself or something like that, and it kind of like makes way for your blade.
Yeah, but I think if you're using a wooden board, you're certainly going to do better than using, a ceramic kitchen top or whatever, I've seen people using. So, it's better than nothing.
Maybe you should send, when you fix that knife for your guy, maybe you should send him a cutting board too, because he seems like he's putting a whatchamacallit. I want to give a big shout out to Brigham Kendall. He wrote a very eloquent hot take. Cutting water bottles to show how sharp your knife is just a waste of water. That was like haiku time.
Yeah. And then I've done that once. It's fun to do, though. I think that's the thing. It is fun to do.
It's fun to do, but it's like all these cutting tests, all I can think of is what are we cutting for dinner? Bottles? Or even the toilet paper. They cut the toilet paper. What do you mean, toilet paper for dinner? Like, make me a dinner.
It does impress the customer who's not really that much into knives. They'll just go, wow, look at that. That cuts through that. That's amazing. You see them on the shopping channels, people doing all these crazy things with knives. You think, wow, that's amazing. But yeah, in reality, how important is that? That'll cut through
that
a water bottle.
That Ginsu. You remember Ginsu?
Yes, yeah.
They did a video where the first thing they did is cut through a leather shoe with the sole and everything, and then they cut through a tomato. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be a terrible tasting tomato right now. Yeah. And then the last hot take, good job, everybody, is from Corbett Foster. Here's a hot take. COVID will be eradicated before the New Jersey Steel Baron updates their website. I fucking like that one. God bless you, man. That was a fucking
Even monkeypox, maybe, yeah.
They're going to change the name of monkeypox. You know that?
Really?
Thinking about it. That looks bad, by the way. If you see people with monkeypox, you're just like, yo, I do not want this at all. Please.
Yeah.
I don't want this at all.
I mean, you probably know more than me because your wife works in sort of health. But to me, it just seems like the latest thing that the media can jump on. I don't think it seems to be serious.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but my wife was on the COVID shit like the November of 2020 of 2019. She was like, "This is a problem," and now she's saying to me now, "This is going to be a problem." So I'm like. Can you do, man? You got to pick your battles. Everybody, you got to deal with everything one day at a time, and then sometimes you just got to like let it alone, leave it alone. Mm.
Look for the good news.
Look for the good.
I'll give people some good news, especially the Canadians out there. Have you heard of MaritimeKnifeSupply.com? If you haven't, what have you been doing? They sell everything that you need as a knife maker, so whether steel belts, handle materials, tools, forges and kilns, even they've got it all. They're even a Canadian distributor for combat abrasives as well, and Rhino-Wet, so all the stuff that we love, they sell it all. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, and apparently if you're in the US, they'll ship there as well, and you could save a bit of money because you get the Canadian dollar as well. So take a look, MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, and they're also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram.
You're doing that thing where you kind of like you're spinning around your chair or something.
I'm not, but I can hear it cutting out. I can hear it in my ears. Yeah,
they all come to me.
Let me just.
They all come to me and they
check that cable.
Come to me and tell me. Trust me.
I can hear it every now and again popping in and out, but I'm not moving.
I promise you. This is just me letting. After the audio apocalypse of a full blast podcast, I'm just letting people know because people are in my DMs. I have one time sensitive tough scenario.
Let's do it.
This is from my friend, Henry Hyde. Hyde Handmade. That's a fucking good follow, ladies and gentlemen. Hyde Handmade's the man. I'm hopefully moving into a new shop that will be building out an empty industrial space. I essentially get to create the workspace that I want. Question is, other than the usual spaces, like a tiki bar and hand job lounge, what are you guys putting in if you were in the same position? So you're the king of, you can build your shop however you want, an empty space. And you can add on whatever you want. You can add on your tiki lounge. Go ahead, tell me what you're going to...
If you build it from scratch, get as much power in as possible. PowerPoint's twice as many as you think you'd ever need, because the last thing you want to do is what I'm doing at the moment, which is extension cords all over the place. They're dangerous. They're no good for anyone. The most obvious is a separate room for grinding, because all that dust and shit, you don't want over certain things.
He wants the fun stuff, though.
He wants the fun stuff, too. You've got to get a beer fridge in there.
Henry.
There you go. You definitely need a sofa, because you're going to need to sit and think a hell of a lot, more than you think you'll need to. So get yourself a comfy sofa, some pillows. I mean, you may get tired a lot.
Oh, no.
So you may want a duvet. You may want to put your feet up. Cold beer. Maybe a TV.
Oh, fuck's sake. You need a linen closet. You need a...
Yeah, this is basically... it's basically an apartment you're making. You can just go and hide away. Yeah, that's what you need.
I'm embarrassed to say, because I am I used to have a shop in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. We built like this office. We put a couch in there, and we had a cot, and we had a refrigerator and a desk, and it was like this little like bunk. You know, it was like a little bunkhouse. And I just thought it was such a huge waste of space. Like, it was I'm going to hang it out in there. And then in this shop here, I was going to build, because when Tony comes up, I kind of have a layout table and I keep that clean, and that's kind of our like conference table or whatever. I thought it would be fun to build like a little cafe, I have this whiskey barrel, and I wanted to make some chairs and make it like this kind of like a cafe style, like spot that you could sit at. And then I was just like, don't you have enough to do? Do you really want to make a fucking cat? What do you think you are? You nut. I'll make anything. So, I don't know. I'm not for frills in the shop.
In all seriousness, if you are building the squat from scratch, try and stay away from that sort of industrial aesthetic, I think, because then it's easy to make it look and dirty. And and that kind of thing. If you try and I've got white walls, and if it's dirty, it's obvious that it's dirty. So it keeps you on it a bit more, you know.
It's interesting that you say that, because I worked in enough metal shops that were so gross that when customers used to come to look at stuff, they were a little bit like appalled, because it was like, how can I be spending this amount of money on this railing in this dump? And when I built this shop, I really wanted to have sculpture, and I wanted to have art on the walls, and I wanted to be light, and I wanted to be something where people could kind of imagine what goes on in here. And I wanted to look, and now it's a disaster again, just because we've been working on 15 different deadlines at the same time. But I really wanted it to be a place where you're just like, when somebody comes in, they're just like, wow, this is where the magic happens, which is, I hate that expression more than anything else, but like, I want that to be the you want that people to be like into what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. You want it to be a nice environment to work in too, you know? Yeah. It's exciting having a completely new place to design how you want. Yeah. But I'd say that number one thing is way more power than you think you'll ever need. That's probably the most important.
Well, we can go in any direction you want. We got more tough scenarios. We have unsolicited advice.
Let's do a tough scenario.
All right. Here's a tough scenario. This one comes from, let me just kind of, Sack Handmade.
With a T.
Pardon me?
With a T.
Yeah, T-Sack. Sack Handmade. I have a dilemma. Currently, for stupid reasons, I have a place to make knives. I don't have a place to make knives or anything at the moment. Any tips on how to stay active around knife making or other things to improve my skills? And then I said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, I used to make knives in this apartment basement. The new neighbor came and started complaining about the noise, which wasn't an issue when he just moved in, but all of a sudden he didn't like me or something. So I was banned from that workshop. Then I got an opportunity to make a shop in a garage of his boss, the boss's mom's house. Unfortunately, they passed away not long after I got there, and no, it wasn't because of me, haha. Rest in peace. Okay. So the house ended up being sold, and now I'm stuck without a workshop. Moving into a house in a couple months where I'll be able to make a small shed in the space. What should I do to keep to maintain and keep my keep working on my skills? So,
I mean, there's plenty of design. I spend a lot of time on a computer, sort of designing what I'm going to be making. So you know, that's a skill set. Maybe if you haven't got, maybe you could sort of develop. And you know, especially now with sort of, I can hear my voice cutting in and out.
Yeah,
there's a problem here. I'll sort it for next week. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, maybe get into sort of, you know, 3D design, CAD design, that kind of thing. So, you know, your head's still in the game, but, you know, if you haven't got the space to, you know, actually physically use tools, maybe that could be something that you could do. But, we don't know your circumstances where you live, but quite often you may find a space locally, like, a community space maybe you could use. You know, these, like, makers, I can hear it's gone. My voice is gone there.
Yeah.
Like maker spaces, that kind of thing. Give me a second. Let me play with some cables.
All right. You know what I would do? I'll tell you what I would do. And I did this when I was making right out of college. I had to make sculpture for a show, and I didn't have a shop. I had to make giant fishing lures for the show, and I thought to myself, well, how am I going to carve these goddamn things? And I basically laminated all the wood, and then I went to my friend's shop to cut them all together, and I just dedicated amount of time to do all the work I thought I couldn't do at home at someone else's shop. And actually, yeah, I was going to do a project a number of years ago, and then I didn't have a power hammer, and I was talking to someone about if I could rent their space for a couple of weeks just to use a power hammer. That's something you could do, because there's a lot of stuff you can do in your home that's not allowed. Hand sanding's not allowed. Gluing's not allowed. You can shape handles with a rasp. That's not allowed. You know, there are a lot of things that and it's actually, be honest with you, when you have limitations, you're always do better work because you're working within the confines of your limitations. That actually might be the move, is to just try to figure out, well, how can I do this? All right. Let's say I can't cut the knives out. Well, maybe I can cut them out of my friend's house, or another friend of mine, I can use their shop to heat treat, and I'll do the heat treating in one day. And then you just kind of break it all apart and figure out the easiest way to get that stuff done. Maybe I have another friend who's got a grinder. I can use his shop to grind in. I think that limitations probably make you better at everything that you do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Does that sound better? Okay, yeah. Good. Good.
So,
any more dilemmas?
That's it on dilemmas. Everyone was full blast on unsolicited advice and hot takes, but we can save the unsolicited advice for next week if you want. I also have weird stories for the after show. But
oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, look, we're hour and 20 minutes. Should we go straight to the after?
Did we do all of our plugs? Texas Ferry Supply, yeah. DOS USA, all that.
We did them.
You have you have a piece of paper and write them all down.
They're at the top of the notes that we're looking
at. Dude, you're. Let's just everyone stop and say how great of a job we do. We do a great
how
job.
Great we
there are.
Are
Fleabag podcasts out like there with terrible audio, like the Full Blast podcast, and they don't do half as good a job as Knife Talk. Number one knife related podcast on this germ infested planet. That's it. Period.
There we go. We're experienced. I think that's what it is.
Whatever.
Thank you all for listening. We do appreciate you.
That's the best part of the whole goddamn thing. It never is not funny. It's never not funny.
This is the bit where we can just, you know, undo the top button of our pants, lean back, and relax a bit more. Yeah. So we talked. You've been watching Pistol.
I haven't. My family has.
Oh, I thought you'd been watching yourself.
I don't have time to watch anything. I'm like literally like. We're like so, everything's been so crazy that I'm unable to do any of this. And I'm getting ready to go to, I was just been talking with Tomer. I'm getting ready to go to, so the sculpture was done. This is done. That's done. And then now I'm getting ready to go to Barcelona in a month.
Is it in a month?
I'm going to go.
Are you there for the birthday party that he's having?
What birthday party?
Oh, you didn't get the invite. I'm sorry.
I don't know. It's like the end of July. I'm hoping you're going to be there, but I can't count on it.
Let me have a look.
You want me to look at the date? Tell me the dates I'm going to be there?
The 10th anniversary. I've got the email here. RSVP is the 17th of September. Oh, okay, it's no, way after.
I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be there the 22nd of July.
Right, fair enough. I think Toma needs a band for this this birthday.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, you should definitely, you know, he could definitely book your band, you know?
So what have you got planned for Toma's? Is it a specific knife you're making
He took the K-tip, and then we did the stack handle. So there's going to be the people taking the class are going to be building the collab knife. And that's going to be cool because then it's going to be very limited. And then I don't know if we're going to have any for sale. But he and I are actually going to be doing – I have to forge some knives for him. So we're going to do some collabs together too. I'm really reticent to do them collaborations, but I definitely want to do one with Tomer. I'm really excited to see him. And I'm only going to go for 4 days. So it's one of those things that's the next on the block, among other things. But –
the next thing to gear up to.
Yeah, my kid just finished her 11th grade. Got one more year left. And get ready for depression mode to hit in. I'm going to be a wreck. I'm going to be a wreck when my kid leaves.
So that's it for the summer. They've already broken up.
Excuse me?
That's it for the summer. The kids have already finished school.
Yeah, Lila has... She's got some last tests to take. But other than that, yeah, she's out of school. She's already started one of her new jobs, and she's going to be doing focusing on music this summer. She's got two jobs, but she got into a music program at a university. So she's going to go for a week to a university to do some. And she's playing tonight with some people, and
still playing bass.
Loves the bass. So she's doing that, and you know, so we're doing that, and her summer's going to be pretty busy. But we're getting ready for her last year in school, and I'm already, you know, we went to the DC Yankees last night, and I said, we're in the train going to the Yankee Stadium, and I said, well, this is going to be the last year. Is there anything that you feel that I haven't cooked for you before you go off into your life that you've wanted? You want to do a checklist of things that you've always wanted me to cook and I never cooked for you? And she's just like, you're getting sad, aren't you? And I'm like, yes, I'm getting sad. And my buddy's going to go, and it sucks, really. So this weekend is Father's Day weekend in the United States.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, well, and in the UK, I think it's a world.
What are you going to be doing for Father's Day?
Well, we have a gig.
Oh, jeez.
Saturday night, tomorrow night. I'm going to be a bit drained Sunday. My sister's here at the moment, so she goes back to the airport tomorrow. But my wife is picking up one of her friends who's coming in on that same flight, who's staying with us for a week. So we've got a visitor here as well. So I think we're just having a big barbecue, and Amy's parents are coming over as well. So it'll be nice, but we're hoping the weather cools a little bit, you know.
Well, yeah. I'll be happy to let you know that I might be getting bombed tonight. Drunk.
Nice. What's the occasion?
Well, the occasion is...
was it the finger of the ass?
The occasion is like I got my blood test done, so... Like I didn't want you don't want to be drinking right before. So I'm down. The doctor's very happy with my weight, and I'm down lower than I expected. And I got another 15 pounds to go before I'm really in shape that I want to be in. So like my new goal weight is like 190. So I'm going to be in there. That's not going to take too long. So I'm at 204.
So what's the plan tonight? Is it?
It's funny that you ask, because I was saying to my wife, I was like, we should have a drink tonight. And she said, well, you got that bottle of whiskey in the cabinet. I said, bottle of whiskey? He's like, she says, yeah, the one you took at the college. I have a story to tell you. So I went to college reunion a couple of weeks ago, they had an open bar, and we all wanted to go back to the apartment. And
I remember you saying yes.
And I said to, they said to me, they said, maybe you see if you can get some bottle of whiskey. And two of my friends were said, why don't you talk to him and I'll grab the bottle of whiskey. And I said to my friends, we're 48 years old. We're not 19 anymore. Let me just talk to the guy. And they're like, he's not going to give it to you. I said, open bar. Let me just talk to the guy. So they're standing kind of a far away, ready for me to, like, I don't know what they're ready for me to do. And I turn to the bartender, and he's just a fucking dude, and it's in, like, this college space. It's not going to be a thing. And I said, listen, I have a question for you. I was wondering if I could get something to go. And he goes, what do you want to get to go? And I was like, I need some whiskey. He's like, I can't give you the whiskey to go. I said, well, he's like, how much do you want? I was like, I'm hoping for an unopened bottle. And he looks around, hands me the unopened bottle of whiskey. I put it under my coat, and I said, let's get the fuck out of here. And we're walking back, and every one of my classmates who are coming back to me, they're like, I cannot believe you did that. And I'm like, I can't either, and I'm waiting for them to grab me. And I walked home with this bottle of whiskey under my arm, unopened, and I brought it, and we didn't drink it, and I'm bringing it back home, and I'm just like, I'm looking at this bottle of whiskey, and I'm just like, that's the one I talked off a bartender. I felt very good about myself. Nice. So we're going to have some of that tonight.
Sweet talking.
I'm telling you, they were like, everyone's just like, I can't believe you sweet talked him like that. I'm like, I didn't even have time or thought to tip him. I just like fucking grabbed it, put it under my coat, and walked away. Thank you, the man. I said, you're the man. I walked away.
Happened.
So bad. So bad. So I think we're going to Manhattan's tonight.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
I have some weird news for you if you'd like.
Let's do it. Yeah. Is it going to beat the man with the cock in his arm?
It might be. This one might be.
Oh, let's do it.
So, weird stories. This one comes from the Mirror, the UK Mirror.
Quality print, yeah. Again.
The title is, my son's dad is a serial sperm donor, and I don't mind. I want more kids with him.
Wait a minute, let me wrap my head around.
My son's dad is a serial sperm donor, but I don't mind. I want more kids with him.
Oh, Jesus.
You want to keep going with that one, or you want to eat something else?
There's going to be siblings all over the place there, isn't there?
A woman decided upon Kyle Gordy to be her sperm donor after trying numerous times to get pregnant, since she welcomed a son and hoped to have more kids with the father of 47. After numerous attempts to get pregnant, a woman and her wife decided to start a family with the help of Kyle Gordy, a man known for being a serial sperm donor. So Kyle Gordy is...
He's got the good
Kyle
stuff.
Kyle Gordy, you don't mind giving you a little handful of it. Go ahead.
Sorry, what's been on this? Have you seen Our Father on Netflix?
No, is it going to be weird?
It's the true story about the doctor. He was a fertility doctor, and he started using his own sperm without anybody knowing. And it turned out that he had a really high success rate as a doctor, but it was always his sperm. And now more and more people are using these sort of, you know, these mail-in DNA testing kits and things like that to show you like a family tree. And they noticed that all these people were sort of related in the same town as well. And they're like, what's going on here? And they traced it back to this doctor who was just putting his own stuff in.
Is it, At just 30 years old, Gordy has already fathered 47 children across the globe. However, this reputation hasn't put the couple off at all, and they're now extremely grateful to him for helping them achieve their dream of having a child. After trying a number of times to get pregnant, Angela, I don't know why they say their full names, Angela whatchamacallit and her partner came across the serial sperm donor Kyle on TikTok. I guess he's got a TikTok profile.
Of course he has. Yeah.
The pair have welcomed their son. Da, 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 after realizing they wanted to, so this dude, this guy looks like, oh yes, he has a Instagram page called Kyle Gordy 123. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's that easy.
Look at this motherfucker. Look at this motherfucker. According to Angela, one of the vials of sperm from the doctors from the anonymous cost $900 each time they tried. Unfortunately, after making 10 attempts, they had no luck. But it was then they began looking at other avenues, and they came across Kyle. After reaching out, he soon put them at ease in regards to his donation as a selfless, kind act.
I've got him. He's got his email address in his bio, which is gooddonor101@yahoo.com.
We were nervous to meet someone new and ask him to help us start a family. However, After speaking to him and knowing why he did this, leaving it in our hands regarding contact with the child, he's changed our feelings completely. Kyle shared his methods, knowledge, and tips on conceiving successfully with the two women who began the process of straight after his health screening came back clear. I don't understand them. I don't understand the need to be... This guy obviously has got some sort of power thing. This is not a good... This is not a, out of genuine good feelings. This is like... This is a manipulation.
Yeah, it does seem strange. And why anybody would want like siblings from the same donor is weird to me as well. But yeah, it's all very strange.
The fact that also that they know him and they know who he is makes it... It's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah. Look, kids, here's your daddy. He's on TikTok. You know? Yeah, it's a bit of a...
All right, here's... I'm going to read you a couple more, and you decide if you want it. Any, that wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. Bottle-fed babies more likely develop fetishes for rubber gimp suits, claims feminist. Do you want that one?
Let's do this one, because little buddy here, he's, yeah, hell of a lot. Is it because of the latex in the... The bottle, I assume.
We're going to read about it. Babies who are bottle-fed suck dummies suck dummies are more likely to develop a rubber fetish or fixation on gimp suits later in life, a leading feminist claimed. Somebody who once played by Amber Heard to film has said today's newborns are more bottle-fed, are more likely to develop into rubber fetish as adults. She thinks this is because they draw comfort and gratification from the smell, taste, and feel and the synthetic of the synthetic teats that they sucked on as infants. Breastfed babies, on the other hand, are less likely to be kinky in adulthood and more to bond with their moms.
Mm. Leading feminist. I don't quite know
what
that means.
I think that most things come from childhood, you know, good and bad traumas.
Yeah, yeah. Memories that you don't even know exist.
I tell you what I believed when I was a kid, I thought that thumb sucking was more like self-soothing. Like, I almost felt like it was more, I mean, we had to have her stop because they were going to fuck her teeth up. And we stopped by, they have this, I don't know if you need to worry about this, but they have this special thumbnail polish that makes the taste bad. So it makes them stop real quick.
Oh, right. I've used that in the past for, as a kid, when I used to bite my nails. And I used to bite them down, and I used to put the special stuff on, so it was tasted.
Why did you bite your nails?
Yeah, I suppose you could use it.
Is it nervousness?
Sorry?
Is it nervousness?
Always have done. Still do. No, I'm not nervous.
I considered, and I was saying to my wife, I was like, you know, the thumb sucking might be, she's kind of problem solving. I mean, it's kind of like, there is something to be said. I think there's something to be said about that. But I don't know. What the fuck do I know?
Yeah. Well, talking about weird things you used to believe as a kid, I was talking about this just the other day with my wife, how as a kid, you know, you'd hear a news report and you'd say, like, a body has been found on the beach or a body has been found somewhere. Yeah. I used to think now that when you died, your arms, your limbs would, like, come in, like a turtle would come into your body. And when they were finding these bodies, they were literally just the torso.
You thought that the arms and legs retracted into the body like a turtle?
Exactly, because only their bodies were being found. It was like they weren't saying a person has been found. They were just saying a body has been found. And as a kid, I was like, jeez, oh, it's just the body. Like, the arms and legs must, like, go.
That's hilarious. I believe that, too.
I was a stupid kid, to be fair. I was a stupid kid.
But, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you don't yeah. you're taking that literally, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well... We have other ones. We have officials at an airport seize cocaine stash in a wheelchair. We have cocaine stashed amid... I love smuggler stories. Cocaine stashed amid coffee bags at a Swiss warehouse. Man cuts his penis off and testicles to be a nullo and is much happier and still can climax.
A nullo? What's a
nullo?
Let's
find out. Nullo. He called himself a nullo. I accept.
Is it as in the null, as in no?
Meet the man who cut off his own testicles and penis because he never felt his genitalia was part of him. Trent Gates from, why did he say his whole name? Trent Gates from Washington, D.C. performed the DIY surgery on two separate occasions, each time using a sharp knife, sanitized with alcohol. See, this is still knife talk. Use sanitized with alcohol using ice water and tablets to numb the pain. 23-year-old.
Two separate occasions. So were they growing back, regenerating like a worm when you cut a worm in two?
It's like the bodies. Come back. 23-year-old IT worker. This is no shocker. IT work. 23-year-old IT worker admitted himself to a hospital after both incidents, the first of which took place in his apartment, the second in a North Carolina hotel room. He says he can still climax despite the extreme surgery. It wasn't really painful, and it wasn't a euphoric feeling. It was kind of, yeah, it's happening. And he said the latter attempt, which saw his penis removed. I use a ceramic knife because it's here. Back to knife talk. He said, I use a ceramic knife because it's sharper than steel, less ripping and tearing. Obviously, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Fucking idiot.
Can you imagine? I was listening to Knife Talk, and they were on my favorite podcast. I cut my dick off. Listen to my favorite podcast. He said ceramic was the way to go. Jeez. That's how you know, ladies and gentlemen, that you can't trust these guys. I sanitized it all with alcohol, and I took every precaution. I had no infections, and I went to the hospital right away. I honestly didn't have a problem with the pain. I just used a little bit of numbing agent on it and oxycodone. They prescribed me when I did my balls. Someone prescribed me when I did my balls to take the edge off. He told Metro.
This guy was clearly bottle fed.
He told Metro US that he didn't want to be a man or a woman, but androgynous in between, known as a nullo, NULLO. Adding that he'd been inspired by some images that he'd seen as a teenager in high school. I saw this photo online. I was like, bam! I was like, that's me. That's what I want to be someday.
Like the Marilyn Manson album cover, yeah. I think probably.
I don't like his opinion on. I don't like their opinion on
ceramic knives.
He's out. He's out. That's enough.
With that, bringing it back to the show. Thank you all very much for listening. Apologies for my audio. I can hear it myself dropping in and out. There's some sort of issue here, cabling or something. So I'll sort that out for next week.
Let's just give up podcasting. Thank you for sticking with us. What do you say? Let's just give it all up. I mean, I can't take it anymore.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big this summer with great deals, all in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice value packs of T-bone steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon, limit 5. Then buy one, get one free on select varieties of Entenmann's, Wonder Bread, or Vita Coco Water, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.